up. Word of Mouth Wednesday. This is the Word of Mouth Wednesday for March the 2nd, 2011. And we've got a big show tonight because the G20 is being exposed, re-exposed, and, well, it's been exposed some more. A public inquiry now is the call, and there's going to be a rally, a big rally coming up this Saturday. And to talk to us about what's been going on with the G20, or talk with us about what happened last week on the CBC, the Fifth Estate, and all the stuff that's been happening with the G20 and all the stuff coming out legally. We got Derek Sobral in the studio as a guest, is going to be on this week. Plus, joining us at the top of the show, we're going to have Kevin Annett is going to be calling in, Eagle Strong Voice. We're going to get some truth on the Truth and Reconciliation Commission hearings, and more issues with the International Tribunal, the crimes of the church and state. And also, the co-host Robin Yetto is also planning to call in a bit later on in the show to break some news here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. So all that and more coming up. My name's Daniel Libby. This is CKLN 88.1 FM. It's Word of Mouth Wednesday. It's March 2nd, 2011. Thanks for staying tuned in, and thanks to Victor Baines Marshall, host of The Middle Passage, speaking with us, or for playing some great music. And, well, speaking with us will be Kevin Ann is going to be calling in a bit. But what we're going to do right now is, first up, we're just going to play something I think that will be quite fitting to play just as we're waiting for our first segment here, just to get you warmed up for what we're going to be talking about a bit later on in the show. How about we go to the G20 song? It's a classic song, The Usual Suspects with Dave Parkinson, and we'll be right back. Word of Mouth.
Blocking off the street where the leaders meet to pick the pockets of the bodies in the street. Talk about poverty, 2 billion already. Bail out the economy couple times already. Bail out the bank using Interact. $1.50 each time, I want my money back. Here come the protesters to challenge the investors who took all the money you've been saving for your best years. The protesters want action. They got dissatisfaction at the corporate elites taking over our streets. When the leaders come to meet, plotting to defeat indigenous peoples, migrant workers, aboriginals, women's rights, First Nations, immigration, talking about the people who have built this nation. Sonic sound cannon.
We all stand behind the troops. We need to stand in front of them.
it up. Word of Mouth Wednesday back here on the show. And that you just heard right there was a bit of the G20 song. To speak with us about this whole situation, actually joining us in the studio is someone who's been involved with the G20 and with all this, the situations that have been happening. Is Derek Soberall, who's also the producer of the Toronto G20 Exposed DVD that we've been talking about, who was actually official FunFest sponsor 2010 for the Word Mouth Wednesday. Derek, with the G20 Exposed. Derek, how's it going?
Great to be in studio today with CKLN 88.1. We're live on the air. 8 months later, G20, it's still going. We haven't given it up. We're the real activists. We were here since day one. And we're just calling for accountability. 8 months later, and it's still a black kind of aspect on the policing here. A lot of unanswered questions. The CCLA, the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, just came out with the report, Breach of the Peace. And Fifth Estate just came out with their documentary. So a lot of people are waking up to the fact that, there was a lot of things that happened that shouldn't have happened, right?
Right, and the Fifth Estate, that's one of the top, investigative reporting shows in Canada, and it's on the CBC. It's a late-night show, so it's pretty hardcore, the actual report. It's G20 Untold Stories, You Should Have Stayed at Home, was a sub-headline. And it was the Fifth Estate, and you were actually credited. Derek Soberall, I saw your name in the end credits as a special thanks. What was your involvement with the Fifth Estate piece?
Yeah, I was honored that they came to me to get some information to make the documentary as good as it could be for the mainstream media. And, I produced the videos, so they used that as a source. And they took a lot of the footage as far as stories that were pertaining to the G20 event, such as John Prine, the 57-year-old... he's a Revenue Canada employee, and he's an amputee. He has a prosthetic leg, and it was labeled a weapon at G20, believe it or not. And, it was unfortunate, and I thought that was one of the most pivotal stories of G20 to show the absolute truth, that this is why we need investigative processes to happen so we can get to the bottom of the truth,
For real, for real. And that is why there is this call for the public inquiry. And the public inquiry, basically, it started off, the people that were at the G20, the people that saw what happened have been calling for it, basically since the G20. Now what we've been seeing is almost every newspaper seems to be calling for it. I saw on, I think it was conspiracyculture.com, had the link to National Post is even calling for a inquiry. Hold on, though. I think we got a call here. I think it could be our guest, Kevin Annett. So I'm just going to take it on the air, and we'll see if it is our guest. Hello, this is CKLN 88.1 FM. You're on the air.
Yeah, it's Kevin calling.
Oh, hey, Kevin. Thanks a lot for calling in. This is Kevin. This is the voice of Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong voice. And Kevin, do I have this right that you're in Europe?
That's right. I'm actually in the south of Europe in Slovenia right now, and I'm on an organizing and lecture tour for the tribunal we're holding in September about the crimes of the Catholic Church and the Government of Canada for the genocide in residential schools.
Right, and that's what you've been, you're known for doing a lot of research on this, and I've been going through the book Hidden No Longer, which you've got available for download, and this was one of your first books, and it's been, updated, and you've got it on hiddennolonger.com, and this, you basically go through this whole history of genocide. But what I actually want to ask you was your current article, your most recent article I saw, Instead of Yet Another Eulogy, and you speak about William Arnold Combs, a fighter and a friend who recently passed away, very recently. Can you talk about this article?
Yeah, this is really hard, I know, for Canadians to appreciate, but a number of our Aboriginal activists in our network have been, I believe, systematically killed. It started with Johnny Bingo Dawson last year, who was beaten to death by three cops in Vancouver. Now William Combs, who is going to be a key witness at our tribunal in September, suddenly was committed to the hospital when he was in perfect health, and he died within a day. They're not giving the cause of death. The coroner is not disclosing anything. It's the same pattern as when Bingo Dawson died. So I believe our people are being targeted, and that's what I wrote the article about. Related to that, there's I think another reason it's happening right now, and that is Chief Capilano of the Squamish Nation, who is working with us, has recently asked the government's Truth and Reconciliation Commission to get off his land, to not hold this conference in Vancouver that they've just opened. And he said that they never asked his permission, and in fact he's opposed to the TRC because it's government and church run, and he's in favor of our international inquiry into these crimes of genocide into the Indian boarding schools. So I think those aren't unrelated events. I think they're definitely bringing the boom down now on any Native person who, you know, isn't part of the government system and is attacking those activists right on the ground.
Right, and I know it's got to be a tough time losing your friend William Arnold Combs, and with what's going on with this with the tribunal, and in your article you even mentioned this that the words and the story of William Combs will still be there because there is videotape of his testimony.
That's right, and you know, in terms of that testimony on my former radio program Co-op Radio before it got canceled. William came on and told a story about when he was in the Catholic residential school in Kamloops, BC, in 1964. He saw the Queen of England show up with Prince Philip for 3 days, and he claims, along with two other boys, he saw them take 10 children out of that school, and those children disappeared and never appeared again. They just vanished, and even which was weird because they were from that area. And William was going to describe that at the tribunal, and now he's dead. And he claims that last May, two men attempted to poison him, and he says it was a previous attempt on his life. And so, you know, I think it's, again, not unrelated to the fact that he's naming the Crown of England as actual people who are at least engaged in the abduction of children. Who knows what happened to them? But, yeah, you know, he has... that kind of story that I think they considered quite dangerous.
Right, and what do you know what is happening right now with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission? Like, is it underway? Is it going on? The actual the government and church operated Truth and Reconciliation.
Well, it's the window dressing is going on. For example, they've had a 3-day conference in Vancouver, and we're actually going to have. I'll send to you and talk about this next week. Chief Capilano and his people went there today, and they had a protest outside the TRC because they went in there and they found, first of all, to get in, you have to pay $500. They gave away a few tickets to, you know, their token Native people, but most of the delegates were white people from all over the world coming to hear these long lectures about, you know, healing and reconciliation. What Native survivor can get in at $500 a head is beyond me. But Capilano looked up at the front table, and every single one of those officials were white people. And they obviously weren't allowing him to speak. They weren't allowing any discussion of the real crimes. We know that even though the government claimed they set up a missing children's task force, according to some reporters in Ottawa, that group has never met. And as you know, the TRC doesn't have the power to lay charges. It exonerates the churches. It doesn't allow survivors to name names or talk about crime. So the whole thing is an enormous publicity stunt. And what Capilano told me is that one of the South African delegates who showed up was quite perplexed. He said, why is the government going through all this huge extravaganza to make it seem that they're doing something when obviously they're not? So I think people are seeing through this whole ruse.
Right. And we've got to promote your book tour because you're going to be coming through to Toronto coming up at the end of March. And that's actually, I guess we can get into more detail maybe if we have you on the show next week for a longer interview, just because I know you've got a cell phone that could be running out of battery. So I just wanted to mention one other quote that I noticed in the article. You had a quote right at the end of the article. You say, this April 15th, on the 7th anniversary of the inaugural Aboriginal Holocaust Memorial Day, that you're going to have a sign that reads, who killed Bingo Dawson, William Combs, and thousands of others. And I was wondering, what is this, the Aboriginal Holocaust Memorial Day?
Well, we've held that event for 6 years now. The 7th, as you said, is coming up on April 15th. And it was actually the event that really forced the government to make an apology because soon after that, one of those rallies...
All right, I think we might have just lost Kevin Annett there. So that was either his cell phone. He did warn us that his cell phone was low on battery, so that could have been the cutout right there, or it could have been the secret. Secret. Who knows what kind of agency, you know, monitoring us and doesn't want the truth out. But you know, that's why. Hopefully, we're going to be speaking with Kevin Annett on the show next week too. The situation, well, with the whole Truth and Reconciliation Commission and what Kevin Annett's trying to start up, which are these tribunals into the crimes of the church and state, international tribunals in the crimes of the church and state. You can find more information on hiddenfromhistory.org. Check out Kevin Annett's work on hiddennolonger.com. That's where you can download the PDF of one of Kevin's first books. It's actually like the history book of the history of the Canadian genocide. And the other one to check out, itccs.org, and that's the International Tribunal on the Crimes of Church and State, which Kevin's in Europe doing some work on work with right now. So yeah, that's good to hear from Kevin Annett for a bit. And we're actually going to have Robin Yetzo is going to be calling in a bit later on in the show too. But maybe we'll switch back into the G20. It'd be a good time to do that. And we still got Derek in the studio. So Derek, what I was thinking about was talking a bit about what happened on Saturday. Because last Saturday, first off, we want to promote the event that coming up this Saturday. But last Saturday, there was actually a G20-related event, and it wasn't really a rally. It was more like an educational panel, and it was the Law Union of Ontario Conference 2011, and it was called the Winter of Our Discontent. It took place at Hart House, which is on the U of T campus, and it was basically a panel discussion called G20 and Civilian Oversight of Policing. It featured the Ontario Ombudsman Andre Morin, Jerry McNeely, the director of the Office of the Independent Police Review, and Ian Scott, director of the SIU, and then also Roger Rowe from Roger Rowe Law, who is a lawyer. And they were all talking about this whole G20 issue. And we do have some clips here too. But Derek, what did you think of that whole event?
Yeah, I thought it was important that we bridge the gap of discussions between the community members and the board of directors for the police services and the SIU and so forth. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a lot of unanswered questions. We're trying to bring back justice and accountability to our police forces in Toronto because of this G20 event. And I think we just need to get to the bottom of it, and we need an independent investigation. The SIU came out, and I mean, there's a lot of investigations going on as far as the Adam Nobody case. Mm-hmm. And we go back to when that news story broke and Bill Blair came out and said that Adam Nobody was an armed individual, mm-hmm. and that the video evidence was tampered with. Well, since that time, he had to apologize. It was false information, misleading information. And I mean, when we have a police chief that's lying to the public, I mean, it's not a good direction to go. Mm-hmm. And we have a 5-meter rule that never existed. You know, the Canadian public was deceived. And, I mean, this G20 event happened in Toronto, and there was a lot of innocent assaults on Canadians.
Exactly.
I mean, we need to really get to the bottom of it so it never happens again. And with the Fifth Estate piece and also the Canadian Civil Liberties Association report breach of the peace, everybody's calling for a public inquiry, including the Ontario Ombudsman. So...
Exactly. So the breach of the peace, the CCLA, Canadian Civil Liberties Association, released a report a couple days ago. And this report they had been working on for months. Probably they started right after the G20 collecting the stories. They had the testimonies a few months ago, and now they finally released the report. And in the report, it gets into a lot of stuff, and I haven't even finished going through it. It's about a 60-page report, I think. So it's around, you know, the same length as the Caught in the Act report, which is the Ombudsman report. So the Ontario Ombudsman was one of the speakers. Jerry McNeely, who's got his report is coming out, I guess. His inquiry is coming out. And Ian Scott, director of the SIU, he was one of the speakers there. And he's been involved with the Adam Nobody case, the case you mentioned. But you know what I was thinking of was actually playing one of the clips here, and I actually wanted to play the first question that was asked. After all the panelists got to do a bit of a speech, there was a Q&A, and you actually got to ask the first question. And then you asked about, do you want to say what you asked about?
Yeah, I was asking about the identification badges because we know on record that over 100 officers didn't wear their badges and they were disciplined by Chief Blair. Mm-hmm. One day's deduction, which was $300 pay, was deducted from their salary for not wearing ID badges at the G20 event. And just to bring up that point, when I went down there as a filmmaker, I went to the G20 Summit Fence area. And because I knew that this Ontario Public Works Act, something wasn't right with it. It was basically, if you went down there, if you didn't show ID, you could be arrested. So when I went down there, they stopped me as a filmmaker. And they said, if you don't show identification, you'll be arrested. I didn't know the full extent of the law, so I was asking questions, as any Canadian should, because it infringes upon charter rights. And it came out afterwards that the Ontario Public Works Act was deemed illegal by the Ombudsman of Ontario. It came out after the fact that the 5-meter rule that had us fearing arrest never existed. And we have Bill Blair with footage of him saying that that it does exist. So these are questions that need to be answered, because when we have a chief of police lying about a rule or a law that never existed, that's a concern for the law itself. And I mean, I went down there, asked a question as a Canadian wanting to know the law, and the officer who actually threatened me with arrest didn't have identification on himself. Mm-hmm. He wasn't wearing a badge. So I mean, here's the two. It's hypocritical, because here I can be arrested, meanwhile he just loses $300. Pay.
Right, exactly. And that's the main thing that all the police officers wanted. If you were at the G20, if you experienced it, the main thing that all the police officers wanted was to see your identification. And they don't want to see, you know, a media badge or, you know, something made at CKLN that was laminated, because I showed it a few times. They actually want to see a government ID. They want to see, you know, take out your wallet. Let's see what you got. That is why it's interesting to find out that there was hundreds of officers that weren't themselves identifiable. Now, what happened when these top officials are confronted with this kind of question? Let's hear some of the responses here at this G20 Law Union event, when there, you know, that question came up. What about the badges?
Well, as you may have gathered, I hold no brief for Chief Blair, but I have to give him some credit on this. He's the one who got the internal directive many years ago. And before that, there were no badges. Unbelievable when you think about it. So he does deserve some credit in that regard. I got to tell you, it would have made the SIU's life a whole lot easier had there been easier ways to identify the involved officers. So I concur.
Thank you.
Okay. Maybe others that want to comment, I'm not sure.
I'll just say I agree with Ian that for those who know that Chief Blair has already indicated publicly that he has disciplined some 90 officers for not wearing the name tags. I can tell you my systemic review looks at anything that's systemic, and if that's a systemic issue, it will be looked at in my systemic review.
Yeah, I concur too, but you have to question why an officer, proud of the work they're doing, you know, protecting the public, would feel the need to conceal their name. What's that really saying? You know who I am and what I'm doing and what I'm saying. I stand behind what I'm saying to you, whether you like it or not. You know, and we're paying these officers to protect us, and they should be proud of the job they're doing. And if they feel the need to have to conceal their name, I think that's saying something.
Right. So that was the clip there. You heard some of the speakers from that event. The Law Union of Ontario put on this event at the U of T. It was at Hart House. That was the first question basically asked. And Derek, you asked it. You just heard what the responses were. So I guess, Derek, what is your response to the responses to the question about police not wearing their badges or name tags?
Yeah, I think, you know what, it was across the board, over 100 officers didn't wear their badges, and the Canadian Civil Liberties Association said the same thing. This is a complicity of hiding your name to perform illegal acts. And from going through all the footage, from going into the picture archive, a lot of these officers that were performing the assaults didn't have identification badges. The Adam Nobody case didn't have an ID badge. John Prine, who got assaulted, didn't have an ID badge, and numerous others that I have photographic evidence of. So, I mean, you know, to get a day's docked pay, $300, and then to be able to carry out an illegal activity, that just seems very unlawful. So, I mean, these are our police, for God's sakes. We need to have accountability brought back to this service. We need people to believe in justice. We need people to stand up for the truth. And, I mean, an officer threatening me with arrest, meanwhile, he doesn't have his badge. That's why that video evidence was so important. And the one officer that was charged twice, the only officer who was charged during G20, he didn't have a badge either.
Right.
And he actually threatened to arrest a reporter as well with CTV.
Right. And that's the interesting part with the media, where the media gets involved. And I think that is why some of the media has been focusing so much on the G20. You see it every, you know, all the papers, all the news media, because a lot of the people, you know, employees or staff of these media facilities had these kind of events take place, had these run-ins, had, you know, physical altercations at this G20. This is a whole issue. That's why I'm actually hoping that there's, you know, that this Fifth Estate is not the end of the coverage. You know, I'm hoping that it's going to be a series. That's what I'm hoping. And, you know, maybe I'll email the Fifth Estate and let them know that. Because it'd be good, you know, just to have, you know, you could always have the first one call it, "You should have stayed at home." But you can have, you know, one, you know, maybe some focused on the protest. This one wasn't that. One thing I noticed, it wasn't focused much on the conditions inside the jail. They did note that everyone they interviewed had been arrested at the G20. You know, basically profiles about four or five different people that were arrested. It's about an hour long piece, and you can find it on the CBC site, and you can also find it on YouTube. Just search for G20 in the Fifth Estate. And I think we even got a link up on TorontoTruthSeekers.com main news feed. You can find the link there.
It's also on my website. They can go to www.torontog20exposed.ca.
Right.
I have the original Toronto G20 Exposed movie on there. It's absolutely free. And we also have the Fifth Estate there as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Fifth Estate is a bit more polished, a bit more, you know, mainstream, if you will. And then the G20 Exposed is exposing a lot, even more details. Now there was some hardcore footage with the UFT raid. That was some of the most hardcore that I saw in the Fifth Estate that I hadn't seen too much of. But you know, we're going to be talking more about the G20 coming up. But just because I think co-host Robin Nieto is going to be got some news for us, are going to try to give him a call. And there is a major event though going on right here on Ryerson campus, 88.1 FM. We're broadcasting from Ryerson. The Live Hip Hop Festival has been taking place this week, and it's going on till Friday. So in support of the real hip hop, we're going to play some real hip hop. This is a track called Peter the Believer. The beat is by Audio 2020, and it is a Caddy One and the Temple of Hip Hop presents. And much respect to real hip hop, and we'll be right back on the Word of Mo. We'll be right back. Word of Mouth Wednesday. Back here on CKLN 88.1 FM, Rogers Digital Channel 947, online, www.ckln.fm. And we've got the co-host Robin Nieto on the line. Hey, Robin, you on?
Yeah, this is big news, nice. Big news about Libya. It's the Pakistan Observer today reported that the U.S., U.K., and French Special Forces have landed in Libya.
Whoa.
The three countries have sent several hundred defense advisors to train and support anti-Gaddafi forces in the oil-rich eastern Libya, where rebel armed groups have apparently taken over. According to this exclusive report in the Pakistan Observer, a Libyan diplomat in the region has confirmed that three Western states, the United States, the UK, and France, have landed their special forces troops in Cyrenaica and are now setting up their bases and training centers to reinforce the rebel forces who are resisting pro-Gaddafi forces in several adjoining areas. I'm just going to keep reading a bit from the Pakistan Observer in their report. A Libyan official who requested not to be identified said the U.S. and British military were sent on February 23rd and 24th night through American and French warships and small naval boats off Libyan ports of Benghazi and Tobruk. The Western forces are reportedly preparing to set up training bases for local militias set up by rebel forces for an effective control of the oil-rich region and counter any push by pro-Gaddafi forces from Tripoli. Other reports claim that efforts to neutralize the Libyan Air Force were also underway to limit Gaddafi's rule in Tripoli, if not fully uprooted from the country. Meanwhile, three Indian Navy warships have also been dispatched to be deployed in the rebel-held areas of Libya. And back over to Canada, the Globe and Mail and Montreal Gazette reported today that the Canadian Armed Forces sailed for Libya aboard the HMCS Charlottetown. The Navy frigate and its crew of 240 officers and seamen will join two C-130 Hercules aircraft and one C-17 already in nearby Malta, along with 22 military police officers, medics, and reconnaissance personnel. The trip is expected to last 10 days. Our defense minister, or at least the Harper defense minister, Peter McKay, said the combat ship includes a Sea King helicopter and that the government is prepared to go beyond simply getting the remaining 100 Canadians still stuck in Libya out. And to quote him, to quote Defense Minister Peter McKay, to have this type of capability in the region, says McKay, we feel will empower our efforts to evacuate Canadians and to prepare for other inevitabilities, whether it's the enforcement of sanctions or to work with the international community. The Defense Minister Peter McKay today refused to comment on reports that members of the JTF-2, Canada's Elite Special Forces Unit, were on the ground in the region. He refused today to comment on whether these special forces, these Canadian special forces, were on the ground in the region. He did, however, note that some Canadian troops are embedded within operation centers with British and other allied forces. So we have some serious business going on here when it comes to what looks like an invasion of Libya. And just to set the situation here, Libya produces between 1.6 and 1.7 million barrels of light crude oil a day. This is the most coveted form of oil in the world. And the price of oil has skyrocketed now. So oil has jumped to over $102 a barrel, as reported in the Globe and Mail today.
Wow.
And around the world, because there's a disruption in the production of light crude oil, alternative types of oil and fuel are also skyrocketing. So we're seeing reports in Reuters that are putting up the alternative oil from other countries are sending their prices. What does it say? Oil prices jumped to approach 2.5 year highs on news that airstrikes hit Brega, about 1.5 miles from the Libyan oil terminal. So we have the disruption of the oil from Libya is sending any alternative types of oil their prices way up. So this is what's happening geopolitically. If you have an alternative fuel that's not national, like what they have in Nigeria, where a lot of oil corporations are free to take whatever they like, the prices of oil in these regions are going up, while prices of oil, obviously, that's being completely disrupted in areas that are supposedly enemy territory like Libya, their economy is being entirely disrupted, so is their production. But any types of alternative fuels are going up. This means that in Canada, the tar sands, its production and it's the oil that comes from the Canadian tar sands will also skyrocket. So right now we're seeing at the pumps, I think today, and any listener who's right now listening, if you're a cabbie or you're out there and you're driving, you can tell us, you can call in to tell us how the prices have changed all in one, in a matter of a few days.
Exactly.
So right now, from what I saw, the average price is $1.24, I think, a liter out there, and it's only going to continue to rise as the disruption continues in Libya. So that's the breaking news. We have UK, US, and French forces, special forces on the ground. We have the Canadian armed forces heading over to Libya to support this, and this has been reported in the Globe and Mail today, as well as the Montreal Gazette. So that's the breaking news. It's unfortunate that that for all of this time we've been thinking that this was purely something similar to what happened in Egypt, but it's obvious that there's a grab for oil that's going on in Libya because they produce between 1.6 and 1.7 million barrels of light crude oil per day, Daniel.
Right, and that's where it makes sense. You know, when I saw this, because I did see that this morning that they were sending these warships, and I was thinking, what's going on here? Because the protests on the TV looked like the protests in Egypt, a lot of what I was seeing, and then they didn't have that response in Egypt, but I guess Egypt didn't have the oil.
That's right. So the problem is this is going to be a long, and there is no referendum here for Canadians to decide whether these troops should be going over to Libya. As what happened before the troops were about to be deployed to Iraq, but there was a huge, uprising of the Canadian public that absolutely refused to send the troops to Iraq, and they were not sent to Iraq. But in this case, the troops are already on their way. They're already on their way. The ship was launched today. It's already on its way, and it'll get there in a few days.
And you're in that quote from that article, you were saying that it's possible that the troops might be the Joint Task Force 2 troops, the JTF-2.
Yep, it's possible. Well, the minister refused today to respond to the question.
To say what it was, right.
To say whether they were on the ground or not. He just refused to answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a pretty serious situation here. The Canadian public has not been informed about whether they wanted to have their troops in Libya, but they are headed over, and it seems to be a heavy-handed, if it was for evacuation for 100 Canadians, I think that's a bit much of a deployment. It's something to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
It does have consequences for our economy in Ontario, as the price of oil shoots up in the tar sands for the major oil corporations, because we don't get that. We
mm-hmm.
do not get our share of that money, because that's all, you know, we don't. It
Private.
All goes into the hands of the major oil corporations.
Right.
While that happens, our dollar goes up. Happens is our dollar starts to become a petrol dollar,
mm-hmm.
and it starts to become quite high in the market, probably going over the American dollar, which means that it'll affect, first of all, it'll affect the, you know, if you're out there right now listening, you know that it's affecting you in the gas pump. That's the immediate thing. But the second thing, it's going to increase the prices of food. So the food will go up because food is transported, and food is transported by transport that uses oil. And so as oil goes up, the prices of food go up. So we're going to see the prices of food go up as well, because if this continues, which it will, because they've already landed and they're already setting up their bases, we'll see the price of food go up. And we'll also see, because of that petrodollar, a continued decline of manufacturing in Ontario, because nobody can buy Canadian products if the dollar is way over the U.S. dollar.
Mm-hmm.
They might as well just go to another country to buy a similar product. So Ontario will be hit quite hard by this situation.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks for calling in, Robin, for giving us this info. I guess maybe we can talk about this some more next week.
Yep, for
we'll
sure.
Keep following
this is going to be ongoing, that's for sure, Daniel.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. All right, thanks.
All the best.
All right, and that's Robin Yetto, and he did basically mention you can call in if you want to, 416-595-1655, 416-595-1655. If you've got anything to say on this breaking news, the invasion of Libya is on, the Empire has invaded, and we're also talking about the G20 And this G20 topic ties in with the global protests, because the G20 protest was against these global leaders, the 20 biggest economic nations, coming into Toronto and having their private meeting, and the people are out protesting. Now there's people protesting everywhere, and it's not just the Middle East and Northern Africa. It's going on in Croatia, in Europe. It's going on in Wisconsin, in the U.S. Derek, what are your thoughts here? What's your response to this, you know, breaking news of an invasion and these global protests?
I really do believe that this is a historic time in the world right now. A lot of people, I mean, nations across the world are standing up for human rights. They're getting rid of dictators. It's going to affect oil because that is the Middle East region. It's Tunisia, it's Egypt, and also Libya, right? I mean, it's spreading throughout the Middle East. People need to become aware of what's happening. At the G20 meeting, they processed austerity measures. And what that means is they're going to cut deficits by half by 2013. The first thing they did was they went to the UK and they increased tuition costs threefold. So education, which normally would cost $10,000, bumped up to $30,000. So we're really seeing an attack on the poor, on the people that are educated across the world. We're going to see food prices increasing, oil prices increasing, because they're behind it. And we see what's happening in Wisconsin. The unions are being attacked, right? So they want to take away their bargaining agreements. And, I mean, police and firefighters are now joining in the protests. Right. So we're going to see this come to America. We're going to see this come to Canada. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, it's the unions are getting involved. The one that, from what I know of, the one in Wisconsin, and there's actually some footage on the latest Press for Truth video. Check out the Weaving Spider on YouTube. Check out Dan Dix and Brian Law's work. They were down in Wisconsin. This is the timing of Press for Truth, because they're down there for a film fest. They're screening United We Fall, and basically, the biggest protest in United States in 2011 breaks out in close by where they're at, and then they're filming it in the legislature. Basically, what's gone on is a lot of students, a lot of these union groups, and just the people of Wisconsin have took over the legislature, the actual government building. That is what they were like chanting in the Croatia footage I saw, the protests there that took place on the weekend, or the situation basically all over the Middle East. They're marching towards government buildings and stuff. This is where it gets intense, and this is where, if you're involved with the protests, you got to be very careful about what you're protesting about, what you're saying, and who you're with, because you don't know who you're with. And especially if you just join a protest with a group of people, you don't know who else is there. Now, this fact was brought up in this Canadian Civil Liberties report, apparently, that there's questions about police plants being, provocateurs or plants or, just...
Undercovers.
Undercovers being placed into these marches. Now, this was brought up at this Law Union of Ontario event that we played the clip for earlier. We played the first question, basically, of the Q&A, so maybe I'll skip ahead to the last. This was the final question, and this was an important one, because it's a question about this police provocateur issue. The questioner brings up the 2007... in Montebello, the SPP protest, where there was three Sûreté du Québec officers that were posing as, black-clad anarchists that were found to be, they were actually police officers, and this was an actual, operation from the highest, ranks of the, police. What's this going on in Toronto? I'm not sure. Check this out.
Officers with their boots and everything went into the crowd, and we're trying to, throwing rocks and trying to, almost create a pretext for the police to come in and sort of beat up everybody. And there were similar allegations made up with the police at the G20, where there were people wearing police boots that went into the crowd, were causing trouble, looking like to give the police as an excuse to go and attack the crowd, and then these same people ended up going and disappearing behind police lines. Now, I think this is a tactic used in authoritarian and dictatorial societies, and I think it should be condemned in the strongest possible way. In fact, it should be also criticized. In fact, these people should be disciplined, if not put in jail, because it's a very, very serious transaction on the part of the police to try to go and disrupt crowds. And this has happened time and time again. Now, I'm not 100% clear, but I believe that there were numerous reports that were credible that documented that this, in fact, took place. And I'd like to hear all four members of the panel about the use of this sort of tactic and what can be done to prevent it and to protect people from such abuses.
Well, if it did indeed happen, obviously it shouldn't, and it's a very serious issue. I don't oversee police in Ontario, so I will defer to my co-panelists.
What a segue. Look, I'm not about to comment on that, primarily because it's a matter that's coming under one of the terms of reference in regards to my systemic review. Because my systemic review deals with stop and searches, arrests, use of force, and what the gentleman has described seems to cover the gamut of that. And so I prefer not to comment at this time so that I'm not perceived as being making a pre-decision in regards to the outcome of my review.
That issue just did not arise in the six SIU investigations, so I'm not in a position to comment, sir.
I'm in a position to comment. This is one of the wonderful things about being in private practice. Nobody pulls your strings but you. Obviously, the gentleman is correct to me, and I don't think that police need to engage in those kind of tactics in order to do their job effectively. I think it's just a shortcut, and it's unnecessary, and it's unacceptable in a democracy. And as I said, I think there's a culture of complacency out there that the general public seems to think that the G20 excesses were necessary for the safety of the public, and the people who were the victims deserve what they got. There seems to be, I think that's why nobody's really doing anything about it.
Word. So we're hoping that people are going to start doing stuff about this, because we've been talking about these issues. People are seeing, you know, protests internationally, and we're really wondering, you know, this is a question of tactics, I guess, in this case. Derek, what did you think about those responses here? This was a major question. This is basically the major question, too, posed in the movie Toronto G20 Exposed. What did you think about, you know, these officials responding? And here, let me just say who these officials were again. You heard Andre Moran, the Ombudsman of Ontario, Jerry McNeely, Director of the Office of Independent Police Review, Ian Scott, Director of the SIU, and Roger Rowe of Roger Rowe Law. Derek, what did you think about how the panelists responded to that at that event last week?
Yeah, I think it's an issue that needs to be investigated, because these are unanswered questions. What if the police were involved, either they were following the protest and dressed in black attire, which we do have video footage of police from G20 dressed in black clothing, and they were protected behind police lines. So that is something that needs to be investigated. And if these are tactics that were used, such as in Montebello, which the CBC did a piece on, that, and they admitted to it. Right. So, I mean, it's up for investigation. It's a question. And a democracy, that's what we have to do. We have to question when things like this happen. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the CBC brought up the fact that where were the police during this Black Bloc riot? Why weren't they captured during the vandalism? And Joe Warmington from the Toronto Sun came up with an article saying that officers off the record went to him and said that there was a stand-down order, basically to retreat and let it happen. And then basically they went after innocent protesters. You know, and that's why people are upset, because innocent people were attacked. Mm-hmm. The most mass arrest in Canadian history, over 1,100 people were put into a film studio at Eastern Avenue. 900 of those arrests were dropped. You know, the police went into the University of Toronto holding guns, mm-hmm. and they arrested over 100 people. All those charges were dropped because there was no warrant. So, I mean, the truth is a lot of officers had no badge numbers. There was rubber bullets fired on innocent Canadians. It took them a month to admit that rubber bullets were fired. Weapon cache was, there was some material there that didn't belong in the G20, and that was covered by the CBC. So all the sources that I'm talking about are actual facts.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Shout outs to Paul Manley, too, of Canadians Nanaimo channel on YouTube. He's the guy that uploaded the original footage. And I think you can see it in the video. SPP and Me is the full quality. with the Montebello 2007 footage. He had that classic footage. Now, what's gone on is that lots of people have got footage out, and there's lots of, you know, lots of more footage that's been coming out. People are uploading more stuff. There was even more footage from, I saw there's a new, it's sort of a trailer or a preview clip of this new documentary that's going to be coming out. There's two documentaries, basically, I'm looking forward to. Into the Fire from Press for Truth on the G20, and another one called Fortress Toronto, which had, which they just uploaded a few days ago, some more footage of these police officers, you know, that weren't in uniform, basically. They're in plain clothes on protest detail. Now, what I wanted to play here is just the last clip I'm going to play here, and this was took place after the whole Law Union of Ontario event at the Hart House on the G20 and the civilian policing. I noticed that there, you know, there's some legal people around, people that know about the law, and even some lawyers around. Lawyer Peter Rosenthal was around, so I asked him what he thought about the event. Here, just check out this clip, and we'll be right back to wrap things up.
All right, word up. Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're just here on U of T campus. We're actually in the Hart House. We just saw an event about the G20, and we got a guest here. Do you mind introducing yourself?
Peter Rosenthal.
And what did you think about the event?
I thought it was a very interesting event, and they're very interesting issues. Some issues weren't discussed that could have been discussed, including the fact, in my view, that a lot of the videotapes of the incident show that literally dozens or maybe even hundreds of police officers committed criminal offenses. Now, the SIU has a mandate of only investigating serious injuries or death caused by police officers. There were a lot of injuries inflicted by police officers that weren't serious or death. But the Toronto Police Service should be investigating those injuries, and they don't seem to. At least there are no reports of any officers being charged, except for the one charged by the SIU.
For real. And are you working, I know you're working as a lawyer, are you working with the G20 issue at all? Do you have any...
Well, I've had I have a couple people charged in the G20 who I'm representing. And then I have one or two possible civil cases, too.
So, and I guess it's is it all unknown, like, when all these issues are wrapping up? Because I know it's been, like, 8 months since the G20, and there's all this, like, new stuff's coming out and all this. Like, is there any time frame?
Yeah. You're going to be hearing about the G20 for the next 3, 4, 5 years, I'll bet you.
Word. So that's Peter Rosenthal. That was after the event. Check out lawunion.ca, and shout-outs to the Law Union of Ontario for putting on a free event at the... Hart House, you know, it was open, and it was information on the law, civilian oversight of policing, and that was just Peter Rosenthal there talking about, he ended off there with the length of time, the unknown, the indefinite time frame of how long these G20 issues are going on for, you know, 4 or 5 years into the future. What we're doing now is we're talking at the beginning of March 2011, so it's basically, you know, eight months later. Since the G20, so much has gone on, but what is going on in the most immediate future with the G20? Derek, what is this event coming up this Saturday?
Yeah, we're having a rally, peaceful rally, just for people that want to come out and support Canadian civil rights, because human rights are under attack in other countries, and in our own country, civil rights were under attack. The most mass violations of Canadian Charter rights in the history of Canada. So we just want people to come out and show support. And it's Canadians calling for a full public inquiry into G20. It's this Saturday, March the 5th at 3 p.m. The location is Yonge and Dundas. And we want people to be united, just standing up for peace, standing up for accountability and justice in our police system. We have unanswered questions. This G20 will not go away. The CBC Fifth Estate has covered it. The Canadian Civil Liberties Association, the Ontario Ombudsman. This city of Toronto demands the truth. We demand respect and accountability because a lot of people were innocently attacked. Nothing like this has ever happened in Canadian history. So we need to get to the bottom of it, and it takes real Canadians to come out and show support and to not have fear. That's the most important thing. We need to be together and to spread love and truth and honor.
For real, yeah. Derek, you're speaking the truth today. Thanks a lot for joining us here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday today. And check out Derek's site at thesecretstore.ca. Check out g20exposed.ca and then or toronto g20exposed.ca. And then also check out the work of Kevin Annan on hiddenfromhistory.org, hiddennolonger.com, itccs.org. And thanks for Kevin Annan for joining us for a bit this week. Hopefully we'll have him on a bit next week too. And also check out the lawunion.ca site, Law Union of Ontario. And thanks to them for putting on that event too at U of T. And then also check out what's going on March 5th, this Saturday, Yonge and Dundas Square, in solidarity with protests in Libya and everywhere else. The G20 Inquiry Now protest, 3 p.m., March 5th, 2011. And also check out Ryerson University campus if you're around downtown in the next few days, because the Urban Hip Hop Union is presenting the Live Hip Hop Festival. It's the first educational hip hop festival in Toronto history. So check it out. We've got some clips from the Ernie Panicoli, a legendary photographer and hip-hop community member who was down actually on Monday, and I filmed some of it, so we're going to be playing some of those clips in an upcoming show, hopefully posting some online too. Check out urbanhiphopunion.com or livehiphopfestival.blogspot.com for info on the Live Hip Hop Festival. That's live, live to inspire via education. It's reconnecting with hip hop roots, and it's going on right now. And that's the word for the Word of Mouth Wednesday. Check out Toronto Media Co-op, mediacoop.ca, for some few articles posted recently on the fifth anniversary of the Caledonia Standoff that are interesting. Check out mediacoop.ca. And thank you for listening. This has been the Word of Mouth Wednesday. My name's Daniel Libby. And also check out youtube.com/supportlocalscene for the full interview or video with Tohoge Tote. We played a clip from last week. That is now posted online. So check out Support Local Scene. Look out for The Burden of Peace and more. This has been the Word of Mouth Wednesday, 7 to 8 p.m. Stay tuned for the Blues Dr. Julie Hill to cure your music ills on the CKLN 88.1 FM. Rogers Digital 947, CKLN.FM. Peace, much respect, and word out.
Everywhere I go, people running around, trying to get to the top when they're really going down. Help them if you please. Oh, 'cause I really don't think they're gonna make it unless they find some remedy. People trying to get to a place they never been, when all the while, Lord, they forget about the friends. Help them if you please. 'Cause I really don't think they're gonna make it unless they're